interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-changed, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring behind woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 553. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. You have to do it, folks. They're not, it's a presumption against you. You're just going to, they've actually done presumptions to benefit you. We're going to maybe hit a little bit of that through the broadcast somehow aside. And the benefits that you're bestowed by someone presumed upon you has to be rebutted. And there's all kinds of times and ways to do that. Most people don't. What's real hard to rebut, though, is when someone's secretly looking at you. A secretive White House surveillance program gives cops access to trillions of U.S. phone records. And this is kind of buzzing. We kind of know that's going on. A little bit of the Snowden idea. We knew about that before anybody was looking at the technology. Now it's coming out, the secretive White House surveillance program, giving cops, that's local. See, this is the, understand the jurisdiction and understand when you hear this stuff, it's not such a union state situation. It's not such a United States. It's a really the United States. It's the one entity. Lincoln done that to us, and people lost and don't understand how that worked. But a little-known surveillance program tracks more than a trillion domestic phone records within the United States each year, according to the letter Wired obtained that was sent by United States Senator Ron Wyden to the Department of Justice on Sunday, challenging the program's legality. According to the letter, a surveillance program, now known as Data Analytical Services, has for more than a decade allowed federal and state and local law enforcement agencies to mine the details of Americans' calls, analyzing the phone records of countless people who are not suspected of any crime, including victims. Using a technique known as chain analysis, the program targets not only those in direct phone contact with the criminal suspect, but anyone with whom those individuals have been in contact as well. So now, just a quick interjection. That's the contact tracing they'll use in other places through the phone. And so, this is showing us more of what I've been talking about behind the woodshed, what's going on, what you can read in the news, which is notice to us if we'll pay attention. The DAS program, formerly known as Hemisphere, is run in coordination with the telecom giants AT&T and conducts analysis of U.S. call records for law enforcement agencies from local police and sheriff's department to U.S. customs offices and postal inspectors across the country, according to the White House memo reviewed by the Wired. Records show that the White House has provided more than $6 million to the program, which allows the targeting of the records of any calls that use AT&T's infrastructure. I'm going to interject. I was told that AT&T's infrastructure is the backbone of the Internet. Now, there may be some outliers. There may be some extraneous things to AT&T, but Ma Bell was where they went through, and that was supposed to be the true backbone. This is a maze of routers and switches that crisscross the United States is their infrastructure, as it's described here. A letter to U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland on Sunday, Wyden wrote that he had serious concerns about the legality of the DAS program, adding that the troubling information he'd received, quote, would justifiably outrage many Americans and other members of Congress, close quote. And I find that interesting. Americans and other members of Congress. We're all members of Congress, I suppose. Maybe just him, at any rate. Will they, is my question there. I don't want to dally too long on this question. I'm not so sure. I think that the evidence is there to show us, and these phones are available to us, no different than a drug addict is. A non-drug addict is brought into being a drug addict by a drug salesman. These phones were seductive, and they were planned to be this. And I'm not so sure that people really care in bulk. And those of us that might would try to do other things and try to limit our exposure. But as I said, it's very, very difficult. That said, we can't give up. Just want to point this out again. The truth is really coming to us this year. If disaster has struck us in other places, we're watching the fallibility of government. We're watching the fallibility of trust and confidence. And I don't see many people responding too much. I see the grumblings, but I don't see the response that I would expect from a really outraged people. We might be outraged. I hope we'll be outraged, but I'm not quite seeing it yet. Might the DAS have evidence to back up this evidence is an ongoing story. I touch periodically, not a lot. It's just an ongoing story. Again, notice to us on what's going on, how things are covered up, why they might be covered up, what they'll be covering up. If you look at the extensions, we can just take up, we just observe all this stuff. Sometimes we can't do a whole lot with it. A federal judge ordered FBI to finally release Seth Rich's laptop. The murder of Seth Rich has long been one of the stones left unturned since the fallout following the 2016 presidential election. Rich, a 27-year-old staffer for the Democratic National Committee, was shot twice in the back on July 10, 2016, while walking back to his home in Washington, D.C. He was not robbed, yet his death was ruled nothing more than a botched robbery. Troves of emails were published by WikiLeaks, giving insight into the corrupt inner machinations of the Democratic National Committee. While Rich was never officially revealed as the source of the leaked emails, it has been heavily suggested Julian Assange was one key figure who had made that suggestion when he highlighted Rich's murder during a 2016 interview in which he was asked about the risks that come with operating WikiLeaks. Mega Video founder and entrepreneur Kim.com said on May of 2017 that he worked with Rich to connect him with Assange. Following Rich's murder, law enforcement took possession of the deceased staffer's personal and work laptops in addition to other possessions found on his person in the scene of the crime. However, the information and the evidence has long been kept under lock and key, furthering speculation of a cover-up of his murder and as a move for power consolidation by those with vested interests in the Democratic establishment. After years, it finally appears that they will not remain a secret much longer. And I went through a little bit more detail on this story this time that I haven't done in the past, just because if they're going to bring the evidence, I wanted you to have a little bit of a context. This is a big story, I think. It's one of those things I just want to keep track of. It also is with Julian Assange exposing this stuff, creating an organization that was providing this information that was otherwise unknown. And what we're seeing in 2023... I'm not going to say came all through what WikiLeaks did. What I'm saying is it started to break down that wall of silence, the blue wall of silence, the CIA silence. The whistleblowers started to come out a little bit more and giving us we're peering into the facade of government. We're not really enjoying the government as it's been designed, and it's usurped in quite a few different ways. And one of the people who protected that usurpation, finally, I'm not going to be able to refer to him anymore. I won't be able to look out. But we went from killing one man to the killer of many. Henry Kissinger, America's most notorious war criminal, dies at 100. So all these times I've been waiting for his input. He is someone to be paid attention to when he was alive, although you could see him failing a little bit. But boy, was he going. Would he ever go away? The Energizer Bunny, about as big, but the titan of American foreign policy, was complicit in millions of deaths and never showed remorse for his decisions. Again, you'll see a lot of stories about this. Everybody has their take on it. I tend to believe that he was more of the war criminal. When you understand he did it on purpose to advance what he thought was what America needed to do, and that would be you can watch and see those failures of all that, even though they were looked appear to be successes at the time. He was definitely on the forefront of all that. Anyway, so we'll read a little bit more here. I tend to be on the negative side, although he's just another figure in the world. We could pay attention to that. He was a mover and a shaker. He was listened to near the end of his death by the big countries that he helped to bring into power today, which I don't even know if that's good or bad. I think the principles are good that they're trying to support, but ultimately they all have their geopolitical contortions, and that's usually not so good for the people ultimately. As I'm trying to point out to you, even though I support Russia's position and bidding underneath law and international law and their principles they want to support relative to their rights and their landed rights and all this other stuff and the protection of their nation, I am not supportive of how Putin moves that through and other things to foist upon his people and again the world because of the support, this new global gulag. And so be very careful when you're listening to me talk about some of the stuff that I'm putting it through a context that may or may not come out at the time I'm speaking of it. But I'm highlighting certain things, and they have a meaning that I'm trying to develop for you over time to get a broader picture. We have not been given the amount of information to be able to do a comprehensive look at a lot of these things. We've only been given little bitty spots and views, again, typically someone like a diplomat like Henry Kissinger was in the he's the inside of the top. They were not going to tell us a whole lot. They were only going to tell us the propaganda they wanted to foist over whatever agenda they want. Interestingly, Kissinger tried to undo the democratic warmongering that was done around Vietnam and stuff, and the democratic government took the funding out so that they couldn't fulfill the peace agreements that were coming down the pike. However, what you saw Kissinger do with China and Russia, which is good in the relationship side, may have actually give them foundation to do what they're doing today, if we can find a thing that what the United States is doing is right, and I'm not so sure that is, and pushing these nations into. That's why the Russians and the China says he was their friends. He didn't believe in the Cold War. And so that was a big deal for those folks. So there's a lot of story behind all this. But Henry Kissinger, who was a top American foreign policy official, oversaw, overlooked, and at times actively perpetrated some of the most grotesque war crimes the United States and its allies have committed, died on Wednesday at his home in Connecticut during his time in charge of the American foreign policy machine. Kissinger also directed illegal arms sales to Pakistan as it carried out a brutal crackdown on its Bengali population in 1971. He supported the 1973 military coup that overthrew a democratically elected socialist government in Chile and gave the go-ahead to Indonesia's 1975 invasion of East Timor, and backed the Argentina's repressive military dictatorship as it launched its, quote, dirty war against dissenters and leftists in 1976. His policies during the Ford administration also fueled civil wars in Africa, most notably Angola. Even the most generous calculations suggest that the murderous regimes Kissinger supported and the conflicts that waged were responsible for millions of deaths and millions of other human rights abuses during and after the 8 years he served in the American government. So, and we have any wonder about the other Zionists in the news today. A lot more to read in this article. It's pretty broad spectrum. It is from the focus of denouncing his war criminality, which should be done. Again, this is what people in government do. And you can be interested. You might be interested to compare this article, what you hear going on today, and what is doing to what Kissinger actually did. That little short list I read is why I read it. Was that almost, it was almost listing out everything that we've heard in the last 10 years, 15 years. And that guy, this Kissinger guy, was right in on it this whole entire time. My X question to the Red Stream Net post that I'll have a link for you just to see was a post of Kissinger's death. Will they now release the rest of the JFK evidence? It'd be interesting to see if he, the Zionist warmonger, war criminal, would be involved in that. And he was the only maybe link that was keeping it from coming out. Even though I understand there's even more people that still may be alive. At any rate. So I've also got a BitChute link here to hear Schellenberger speak on some of these things relative to psychological warfare that certainly was in play, speaking of these global psyops. And a next post, again, by Whitney Webb, was posting to somebody else. So it's kind of a connection of things. But representing... presenting to you all these cognitive warfare issues, the psychological warfare, NATO, U.S., U.K., and social media psychological operations. All that info I've been bringing up in the last few broadcasts over months now. We have an interview, a whistleblower so-called, showing it is going on. Well, to me, I don't think it's a whistleblower. When I could figure out behind the woodshed, you could see it, you heard it, you could have proved it out yourself before now, but here they have it. He even says during this video, you really need to hear him say, you need to hear these people say this stuff. But Michael Schellenberger says, U.S. and U.K. military contractors deployed sophisticated psychological operations and disinformation tactics against the American people. So we have a couple of different angles on all this, but Whitney Webb posts the video of that, and she makes a comment. CTI League, what he mentions, has access to critical American infrastructure, including nuclear reactors, dams, and hospitals, and is run by a career spy focused on blaming Iran for a cyber attack on the U.S. Isn't that just as big a story, if not bigger, as them censoring people online, she asks. Well, while this is no news behind the woodshed, and don't forget the Schmidt Modernization Act, which allows the American people to be conned. So this isn't even new news. I would even not even consider that guy, Michael Schellenberger, a whistleblower because of that act. He's just confirming that they're doing it is all. So this isn't news, but people think it is, and so it is, I suppose. So I have a link to the BitChute, or a link to hear Schellenberger speak, if and you just can't believe the guy behind the wordshed. This is all, it's all like written out there for us. I try to present it, keep us ahead of, way ahead. See, how many months are we ahead of the fact of that? He even says in that article, they just now found this out. Even they know more than March when he first went in to tell them about it. Well, we'd already discussed it behind the woodshed about all that they were going to know and did know and things like that. Well, they're just finding out about it. So I'm always just, I hear that and I just have to chuckle, wonder why more people aren't listening, getting behind the woodshed. Not even listening, but getting behind the woodshed. Get, roll your sleeves up and figure this stuff out. And if that's important to you, start taking action, proper action, better action, any action at this point. Or you can move on, keep moving. This week we've got a lot of, again, the exposure is coming here. This is the type of alien disclosure, alien to the Republican form of representative government. I suppose I could say that we listen to Schellenberger, or we can also see entries here about the Cyber Threat Intelligence League. The U.S. and U.K. military contractors created a sweeping plan for global censorship in 2018. And this is from a link at cryptogon.com, and they give you a couple more links to go look. It's very interesting information. You start pulling the stuff together to make a context. You can maybe hear, if I get down there, down the road, the tabs, there's a, someone actually is observing this, that we get all this information. It's, it may not be, it could be true, but it's out of context. It's all very important to keep track of. So a little bit more context on this story as it's developing. That an odd group of cyber threat intelligence analysts with ties to U.S. government, Israeli intelligence, and tech giant Microsoft have, quote, volunteered to protect U.S. healthcare institutions for free and have even directly partnered with the U.S. federal agencies to do so. They have also recently expanded to offer their services to governments and social media platforms to target, analyze, and neutralize alleged disinformation campaigns, in quotes, disinformation campaigns related to the coronavirus. This is on the heels of this so-called whistleblower coming up. You've got the, Cryptogon's got a little link. Here's our flashback, 2020, meet the IDF-linked cybersecurity group protecting U.S. hospitals pro bono. Hand something funny for free. The phones, you get to pay for it, but hand them all this stuff for free, all the services. Let them do what they will. They will pick it up and they will take it. It's part of the plan, and it works really, really well. So we're getting exposure to all the things we identified behind the woodshed. It's not really coming out. We see the same IDF-linked problem that we're looking at in the world. I just find that fascinating. It's a hub of deceit, and yet everybody uses them and their tools, associates with them, supports them even. A disgrace coming down the pike here. We get to the tabs. We've got lots to do today. Tying lots of things together. And in that CTI, you heard Whitney Webb discuss the CTI League. The CTIL is now also has a, there was a report done on that, and she sounded like she was speaking to that. I just found something and wanted to throw it in. Again, getting a comprehensive context of what we're really looking at here. And so I have a link to Matt Taibbi's report on the CTIL that Whitney Webb mentioned, and we could read, the whistleblower makes trove of new documents available to public and racket, showing that the birth of the censorship industrial complex is in reaction to Brexit and Trump election of 2016 is now coming out. And again, Seth Rich, 2016, Julian Assange comes on the radar in 2016 with the support there. And so we see this continuum going on. It's, we could have been watching. If we hadn't, we could have looked around and seen that this was going on. And a whistleblower has come forward with an explosive new trove of documents rivaling and exceeding the Twitter files and Facebook files in scale and importance. They describe the activities of an anti-disinformation group called the Cyber Threat Intelligence League, or CTIL, that officially began as a volunteer project of data scientists and defense and intelligence veterans, whose tactics over time appear to have been absorbed into the multiple official projects, including those of the Department of Homeland Security. Can't stop me, but please stop me when you haven't heard these before behind the woodshed. It's just amazing how these are starting to come out, that they were exactly what we were told early on in the notice, the news. We call it the news, right? I've looked at it and said, oh, there's a notice. Everyone wants, there's a theory that says these, the evil, the they have to give you notice before they hurt you. Well, that's the news. Just look. It depends on what you're interested in, whether you see it or not, apparently. But here we have the CTI League documents offer the missing link answers to key questions not addressed in the Twitter files and Facebook files. Combined, they have, offer a comprehensive picture of the birth of the anti-disinformation sector of what we have called the censorship industrial complex. And so I'll leave this link. I won't go any further. There's a lot to read in all these articles I'm bringing up. I do hope you go to the links and inform yourself. You can dig in if you're interested in this one. Again, this is going to tie through a lot of things that I know people that are interested. Whether or not it'll help them, I can't possibly know. Sure looks like the pointers are there. But you can research this article, get the link. It's an extensive expose that Matt Taibbi did, if you would like. And again, get that context for the truth you think you know, and then bring it into purpose. That's sort of pretty much. And here we go, speaking of a Trump election that you're hearing, just kind of going through this. Again, I don't care about all that myself. I've washed my hands of so-called elections all a long time ago after I saw the programming and the connection to the internet back in the early 90s. So this isn't not news, but it's my experience, and it came with me as I've come through and did my studies. I could have that in my background, at least to rely on. I know what I saw. That's why I say, go read the word, go listen to people, see it, experience it, so that your review of what you see, your observation, your witness is true to you. So speaking of the Trump elections that has been themed through these tabs so far and furthering the myth that the people vote for president when they do not, but it's important just the same to watch the system, the occupation, usurpation that we watch. Mike Lindell cheers judge's historic ruling as vindication. MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell is celebrating last week's ruling of Georgia's voting machines as vindication, countering critics who say he is a conspiracy theorist for promoting claims about election fraud. I have to interject. There's an interesting decision this judge wrote, specifically mentioning as a judicial determination that this subject of conspiracy theory. Historic ruling by judge, Lindell wrote on X, formerly, so they got to always add that, on X, Twitter, how's that? On Thursday, anyone questioning elections or election machines are not conspiracy theorists. Well, don't I feel vindicated since 1993? Well, to me, it's not even you can call names. Like I said, once you see this stuff, they can call you all the names in the world. You will not bend. You will not break. I guess you can be broken, but you won't do it willingly. You will hold to your truth that you've identified. That's what I tell everyone to do. You can't go on my words. Go support my words with your own study and experience. Try not to put yourself in jeopardy when you do it. Here we have it. Those of us that looked at new and have been saying that these election machines are no good. We're not conspiracy theorists. I already knew that. I know the technology is there. I know the capacity was there. Then they hid it inside these machines, and then they closed everyone off from seeing and scrutinizing the contracts and the capacity. I found that out early on as well. They would not give us the software, the code, so we could read what it was supposed to do and see what was going on. But Newsweek reached out to Lindell via email comment. In the U.S., it states here, U.S. District Judge Amy Totenberg issued a 135-page ruling last Friday in the long-running lawsuit seeking to rid Georgia of its electronic voting machines in favor of hand-marked ballot paper ballots. The lawsuit, filed by individual voters and election security advocate group, the Coalition for Good Governance, boy, that has me shaking my head right there. At any rate, people just don't know, maybe. Maybe they do. I don't know. They argue that these plaintiffs argued the machine's cybersecurity flaws violate the constitutional rights of voters to cast their votes and have these votes accurately counted. In a footnote of the ruling, Totenberg said that the evidence in the case, quote, does not suggest that the plaintiffs are conspiracy theorists of any variety. Quote, indeed, some of the nation's leading cybersecurity experts and computer scientists have provided testimony and affidavits. There's affidavits on behalf of plaintiff's case in the long course of this litigation, she wrote. So this is an interesting turn. This is a look at very carefully at Georgia. Look who's charging Trump. And all this, I'm wondering when all this stuff is coming out, why Trump hasn't utilized a lot of it. But, however, I don't know. I'm not getting that close. I do not get that close. I don't have the time, and I don't have the connection anymore right now. Moving through, just barely surviving here, has been a challenge to begin with, but doing my best to bring this stuff up. You know, I don't talk too much about this. I don't get behind the MAGA and all that stuff. There is principles in there that you can use, but a lot of it's just it's eye candy. It's something to divide the society, and while all this other nonsense that you hear me talk about goes on, this, relative to people voting, this is not just about president, even though it looks like it's about it. This is local Georgia voting machines are found to have problems. This is not a surprise to me, but and to some people who've looked at it. I'm not talking about, oh, I believe that they're wrong. I'm saying I have looked at these machines early on, before they were what they are now, and saw how they were actually doing, they could do. All the technology was built in, ready to be able to pull this off, and they were denying it just like now. And then they wouldn't give us software, and they wouldn't give us how they hooked it up and all these other things. Anyway, we move on today. Very important stuff moving along. And if you believe in voting, no, I'm not saying at some point voting is okay, but it's not since the fall of the Republic. Now we have a different problem. Like I said, there's a lot. If we're going to be a people to keep a republic and the one that was established, we're really going to have a lot more intelligence about how we address this and a lot more context and knowledge about what's gone on in order to decide what the plan would be. And it's going to have to not be on a lot of argument. It's going to have to be on and made up stuff. It has to be really well done. However, I don't know that can happen. I think we've gotten too big for ourselves. We're clueless as a society. I talk about stuff and trying to keep it simple, and I can't get some of these concepts to go through. And it's very difficult to watch, but that's where the reality is. So we're getting the proof. It just takes a long time. They say justice is slow. Well, that's not justice. A delay in justice is injustice. And so that was a foisting of a bad principle on people, and they think that's the way it's supposed to work. We don't have a mind in us to alter all this so that it's immediate. Bad laws are thrown out immediately. We're given the opportunity to be challenged before they go into force and effect. Bad systems are not challenged. What happened is the Bar Association allowed, they had their reasons, but they allowed sovereignty to be in the state, and it was supposed to be a limited form of government. No, they gave it sovereign powers beyond. And so that's been, I think I can see there, that's what's caused the problem. But moving on here, so in all of this, it might be important that the benefactors of the conspiracy to defraud the American people, these guy called Biden, remember, he's the beneficiary of all that. He says that the old world order is running out of steam, and I observe, despite the boiling oceans. The next few years will determine the future world order, says Biden. The U.S. president previously admitted that the post-World War II system had run out of steam. You people of history, really think through this, what they're talking about, how they're moving on, the transformation that's going on, and the United States is involved in it, even though they're at odds. Some of the non-geopolitical posturing has to do nothing but advance the transformation of societies on a global level. Again, as I pointed out, one of the main things is economics. Everything goes through the economic financial system that they've set up and been set up since 1913 that we know about it, and then all the spin-off nonsense that came from it. And the people were quiet. The people were quiet every time they've got attacked in the power, their money, their coins, their gold, their silver, they were quiet. And that's what the usurper and occupier uses. They sure take notice. You can see they sure took notice of Hamas when they came out, didn't they? Stop looking at all that politically with all your support. Just look at the dynamic of that. And as I did last week or the week before, lay the foundation of international law upon it, and you'll see. You can sort it out pretty quickly. Speaking ahead of the meeting with the Chilean President Gabriel Boric on Thursday, Biden stated that there comes a time, maybe every 6 to 8 generations, where the world changes in a very short time. Now, I'm going to suggest here, take note of this, because we may be in that time. And the point is, if we're in that time, you really do have to roll your sleeves up, because it's going to go in the way that it gets forced to go, and if there's no resistance, it goes there. If this is that time, if this guy, this demented guy, has observed this, and this looks to be the truth, it is all hands on deck for the people right now. This is the time. This is the moving time. every time before, years, decades before, we could be walking around the Titanic without problem. But here comes the transformation. And so if he's given us that notice, I think people need to come together with themselves and work this out in a way that's better than that new ordered world that they want to bring on us. According to the White House readout on Biden's meeting with Boric, the pair discussed issues of shared concern, including efforts to combat climate change. There you go. That's where it's going. Biden has also spoke last month about the need for a new world order, suggesting that while the post-World War II system had functioned for decades, it has run out of steam. I've said that it's lacked parity, and there has to be that parity because the nations are coming to a point where they are getting tired. They've had it of being beaten up. The Kissingers of the world have really opened their eyes, I believe. And but, as I've said, there's a new deception coming through BRICS to bring that parity. But, this new world order will come on quickly, like an overnight success, so-called, folks. This has been being prepared forever. Yeah, that's why it's probably predictable. It has been preparing for a takeover for many decades. The emphasis on climate change, as you notice, that the new ordered globalized world usurpation will be sustainable if you do nothing and let it happen. And there's, if you look very carefully, what I've been talking about these consensus projects and all, that's getting your consensus. That's getting your buy-in. And it takes a real sound position and a strong mind, and not hard-headed, but strong mind to keep track of this and know where your fundamental rights are sitting. As I've told you, the very first thing, the laws that they use, they always put the savings provision, otherwise provided by law, comma, and then they give paragraph after paragraph of all these authorities. Well, if you don't know that your power sits in that 4 or 5 word phrase before the comma, you will lose. And you got to then, and you may still lose because of the usurpation of the bar of the judiciary. However, you have an insight. And it's easy to prove, and it's easy to keep sticking in their face, and it's just a matter of getting enough people to start noticing all of this. So this will be the world where you will have this coming transformation, no property or privacy or self-determination. Think about what we're talking about over there in the Middle East, self-determination, and you're going to like it. If this is the end of history, then the new ordered world of torment will exist for a time. We are told until thy kingdom come, if it is not the end of history, those future generations may never escape while we sit as crickets. We may want to reconsider that, folks. As well, our culpability removing any defense, such as where we're forced, sounds like the victims of Kobe swindle, doesn't it? We always resort to that. We resort to our own necessities to be an excuse. We've got to stop that. Climate change and the transformation of society to that sustainable goals condition, the globalist condition. We talked about the boiling oceans. Speaking of that, we now see something come up on the news here for us. The new plant hardiness map used by gardeners nationwide is unveiled. So if you read this story, you read the parties are, this did not come out of the Oregon State University. This comes out of Oregon, but it didn't come out of Oregon State University, which was used to be the Agriculture Extension University, helping producers with real scientific help. This map came out of the University of Oregon. You have the Oregon State University, and their rival, so-called, is the University of Oregon, U of O, the Sustainable Development Hub of Oregon, which is a partner with the USDA. These are another promoter of the agendas at odds with producers. So understand who's issuing this map with the USDA's blessings. And you'll see that in the article available after this one, you'll see it in the tabs as well. If you read through, you'll see that there's a link. This map also is limited to a 30-year average. And that's sort of how Michael Mann made global warming up, folks. So if you look very carefully at what they're talking about here. The article says the United States Department of Agriculture today released its new plant hardiness zone map, the national standard by which the gardeners can determine which plants are most likely to survive the coldest winter temperatures at a certain location. The USDA describes the latest map, jointly developed by Oregon State University PRISM, PRISM Climate Group, and the USDA's Agriculture Research Service, as the most accurate and detailed it has ever released. Low temperature during winter is a crucial factor in the survival of plants at specific locations, the latest edition of PRISM's signature product, the 30-year Climate Normals, was released on December 2021. PRISM releases a new Climate Normals every 10 years, taking away one decade's worth of data and adding another. Let me just offer you that very consistent with budgeting and the CAFR. Only they, CAFR does every year, and they slide everything else off the next year. And so that's how they hide a lot of this leverage funding. When these is on a 10-year span, understand your weather cycles, and they're inside of one of those, so they can keep that hockey stick working if they want it. And this is these new climate normals, folks. You listen to that, climate normals. On a third, determined through a 30-year-long straw we get to look at. Okay, if they say so. So nonsense. What about a decadal oscillation? The robust reoccurring pattern of ocean atmospheric climate variability. That El Nino I keep talking about, is that synced to accentuate the desired outcome? You know, I'm trying to point out is what you really have to start looking at is how they move the frame around to see whether or not they want to pick out the right parts. It's another way to cherry pick statistically. That's how, again, that you watch how these people do this. When you see it, you know them. When you see them, you know who they're doing. And the problems and others about that is likely why the USDA only describes the map as the most accurate and detailed map, but did not certify that it is the most accurate detailed map. They also tell you in one of the links under the word climate in the article that these are projected shifts. Projected shifts. How hockey stick convenient, don't you think? So you just watch this thing coming out. The technology is out there, folks, to really give us information and do things. But they use this so-called science in order to move the outcome, the agenda, to get people to buy in. Overall, the 2023 map is about 2.5 degrees warmer. Do I get to read that again? The 2023 map is about 2.5 degrees warmer than the 2012 map across the conterminous United States, Daly said. This translated into about half of the country shifting to a warmer 5-degree half zone and a half remaining in the same zone. The central plains in the Midwest generally warmed the most, with the southwestern usually warming very little. So, 2.5 degree warmer since 2012. The climate alarmists say we're all dead. That was what we were supposed to go until 2100, right? We're already there. We didn't make it to 2100, let alone to 2030. We're all dead now, folks. Okay, to all us climate Caspers dealing with the cold realities, with the deep cold already this year, into the low 20s in the last week and a half, and coincident with the newly developed recurring El Nino. Remember, that's running. I talked about that, too. I'm not so sure of this basis for a reliability relative to the chart's short reference period. But there you is. Brand spanking new hardiness chart. Projected now. They're telling the future. The hardiness chart? I wonder when they'll make a chart for laurelness. Hopefully some of the increased resolution with the added stations, they'll say the big jump in station measuring, can help a particular places, as hopefully the added stations weren't from the dreaded anthropomorphic heat island, stack 'em and pack 'em centers these sustainable clowns want you to move to as the oceans start to boil. Oh, and for more laurel-y laughs and hearty guffaws, while you're at it, at the link for this article, notice the 2.5 degree raise in the hardiness chart article does not agree with the alarming 1 degree increase a couple of years ago, as reported in a related story they want you to read, not about climate norms, but about America's new normal. A degree hotter than 2 decades ago. That's within the 30-year blinders they put on us, right? 2.5 degrees and 1 degree are not congruent. I wish they would make up their minds. Only 1 degree, I guess. I guess the leaf blanket stays on my garden here. Yet, for us in the United States, you'd think maybe someone is trying to fool people into planting early or use otherwise unviable plants since it's not so much warmer and going into a seemingly cold trend. If they start leaning into the fact that you think it's getting warmer, you start planting earlier, or you start planting plants that could not live in the colder thing, you'll have dead plants. If you are relying that on food, you aren't going to eat. 22 degrees overnight last week temps in mid-November, instead of the unprojected 19.5 degrees it should have been without the global warming, is not the kind of warming I'm going to ignore when disregarding that kind of cold. It's an existential and immediate threat, walking us right up to the cold that's coming unprotected. We're supposed to prove out the science, and this is what they start to do with us. I'm certainly not going to forget to protect my dragon fruit plants despite all this killer ocean boiling warming, am I? Do I trust these folks? How about Pope Francis? You listening? Are you listening to this, Pope Francis? No, of course not. Climate change is not about weather. It's about political climate change and suffering the clowns brought out to cover a circus accident, the sustainable circus itself. No doubt P.T. Barnum would be taking detailed promotion notes on this greatest snow job on earth by the federal agency and university system partners. We've talked about these two systems for a long many decades. Again and beyond the promo, hopefully some of the increased resolution with the added stations can help growers in particular places, except they say that the Southwest, except for in the Southwest, which they say warmed very little. So that chart's not going to be changing for you. It's useless to you in some regard, more than what you had before. In other words, half, some went up a little bit and some didn't. It's kind of like what the world does. It's a good balancing act. It rains somewhere and it's dry somewhere else. It's hot somewhere, it's cold somewhere else. Mother Nature does that all by itself. Like you breathe, like your heart pumps, until you got the jab. And though then we have that problem, it warmed very little. And though with the historic variability, apparently without the El Nino contribution, either north or south of the actual norm, we don't get the three-dimensional view of this. And I think we're starting to see this. I was talking, writing to somebody. I was hoping the El Nino would give us a bit of cushion. But what it seems to have done, it seems to be pushing up the jet streams harder and driving it down. The winter, dense, very dense weather coming down. So we're seeing a lot of snow, a lot of cold air, deep cold already. And so it didn't quite work the way I was hoping, but it's working the way it will. And it works, again, decadally. It works routinely in a cycle, variable. We're well within those Earth variable abilities over the Earth's history. You can't look at that over a 30-day and make any kind of a real claim on it. So we have the link for you, the America's New Normal, a decade hotter. Well, they just said the chart is based on 2.5. So I don't know where you drop in on that, but here we keep going. The sustainable goals are upon us. We're having to watch people work with it and or utilize it for their what they want to see, good or bad. And this from sustainable plant temperature projections to sustainable animal protein. Purdue made chicken feed for humans to eat. Purdue believes it has a clever way to combat criticisms about chicken production. Sell humans practically the same food it feeds its chickens. The company has created Chicks Mix, a new snack that is, quote, made from most of the same ingredients that the company's chicken feed is made of. The stunt promotes Purdue's vegetarian and antibiotic-free chicken feed because the company said in a release that consumers have become increasingly interested in the health and quality of the foods they eat. And now we get it to where the real interest for me was in this article. I hope you found it more interesting than what they just said here. Listen to this. Chicken concerns. In 2014, Purdue removed routine use of all human antibiotics amid concerns that they could be putting human health at risk. Other chicken producers like Tyson Foods enacted similar policies around the same time. The food industry has been under pressure from the consumers and public safety advocates to come up with alternative ways to keep poultry healthy. The use of antibiotics to treat sick chickens, making the medicine less effective in humans, raised concerns about the contributing the spread of the drug-resistant bacteria. However, the removal of human antibiotics hasn't been a successful initiative for Tyson, a fact that Purdue notes on the Chicks Mix site with a veiled knock at its biggest competitor without specifically naming them. Tyson, the country's largest poultry producer, recently announced that it will will once again use certain antibiotics in its chicken 8 years after it announced plans to ditch the drugs in some of its production and slapped a no antibiotics ever label on its packaging. How fickle, isn't it? Well, the food industry has been under pressure from consumers and public safety advocates to come up with alternative ways to keep poultry healthy. The use of antibiotics to treat sick chickens, making the medicines less effective in humans, raised concerns about contributing to the spread of drug-resistant bacteria. However, the removal of human antibiotics hasn't been as successful as initiative as Tyson, for Tyson. In fact, the Purdue notes that it's actually used in Tyson, in the chicken farms, the animals are raised and crowded in unsanitary conditions and can be prone to disease. And I just want to interject. So that's how your chicken food, that's how your food's being, your animals are being made. It's in unsanitary and crowded conditions. Why it's not working for Tyson. Yum. The company has said that the antibiotics it plans to use in chicken production are not important to the treatment of humans, and about half of the U.S. poultry farmers use some form of antibiotics to help keep chickens healthy. So half of U.S. poultry farmers use some form of antibiotics to keep chickens healthy, it also noted. For Purdue, offering chicks mix is a way of partially reminding people that Tyson's change as they begin to see its rival new antibiotic label. Quote, we believe you are what you eat, and at a critical point in time when the competitors are going to back to using preventative antibiotics, we want to reinforce our commitment to feeding our chickens and your family clean food, said David Zucker, not the Berg, executive vice president of marketing at Purdue, is a Chicks Mix press release. Packaging for Tyson chickens will again use a no antibiotic important to human medicine label by the end of this year. That standard recognized by the USDA and the World Health Organization also for the use of antibiotics that are not crucial to the treatment of human diseases. And we can trust the USDA and the World Health Organization, right? Yeah. Now, does anyone remember the Kobe swindle at warp speed? Or does the jab have your memory? If you are alive to have a memory with that jab, remember here. I just reported on Tyson Notice. Tyson just teamed up with the largest insect breeder, Protix, in an effort to sustainably feed you human cluck-clucks. Eat the bugs, folks. Salud. It's salad, folks. Toss the greens. Just toss them. Get rid of this nonsense. So we have re-included the last Protix Tyson announcement, just so you can see it. You know, so you can put all this stuff together. It's all in one place. You could go back to the last broadcast to find it on the blogcaster. Oh, no, you can't. As I have to inform you all, I still have a problem getting FTP up, and I can't publish the broadcaster. The blogcaster is going to be... It's published. I mean, it's sitting there as a draft. I can't publish it. So until we get FTP connection to the audio file, then I can't put the blogcaster up. If you want links, go over to BitChute. I put that in the X, and I put that, I think it mines, to show you to go over to get the links as well. Until we get this resolved, I don't know what more to do and say. I'm sorry about that part, but we'll see how we can get that done quicker and get it to back to working. So moving back into the sustainable foods, and for those of you, my listeners, that will participate, how are you going to pay for those sustainable snacks with sustainable CBDs, of course? By the way, which is the more intelligent animal, the chicken that gets its feed for free or the animal that the rancher gets to pay for its feed called snacks? Asking for a friend, they're waiting for an answer. IMF director says CBDCs could replace cash, increase financial inclusion. Just put your mind back when I was talking about BRICS and who's involved there in the financial system. IMF director says CBDCs could replace cash. They want to get rid of cash. Kobe Swindle was about trying to get you to feel money was dirty. Kristalina Georgieva addressed the Singapore FinTech Festival, and according to her keynote speech, CBDCs are capable of replacing cash. The CBDCs can also apparently do the magic trick of financial inclusions. Other benefits, as listed by Georgieva, are better resilience of developed economies, more convenient cross-border banking, as well as low cost and safety in terms of being alternatives to what is referred to as private money. Speaking of, Georgieva claimed that high-quality personal data protection can be achieved with CBDCs, and the IMF also seems to be considering how AI might be baked into the whole thing in order to enhance CBDCs. So these enhancements to the sound of the words I'm making, if you don't hear the sustainable goals connection to all this, you're not listening close enough, you're not reading much, because this is what they're talking about. AI baked into the error-prone surveillance of the token citizen chattel, such as anyone desiring such warm and fuzzy inclusion, is what this is, what they have in store for folks. And the IMF has also a virtual handbook on CBDCs out, whose purpose is to serve as a reference guide for policymakers and experts at central banks and ministries of finance. So my listener may want to go to that link, get the link, go to the handbook, and read how those wielding the master's card plan to run the digital gulag. You'd at least have a running start to see of seeing the final gate closing. It also might inform you enough to know which side of the paddock gate to be standing. And I hope that's why you listen behind the witch head, to figure that out. There's more here, and we'll move on quickly. I've got so much to hit. There more is on the alarm again on how vulnerable that we are in a digital realm. She talked a little bit about that. Your private data could be safe, but it could be. It can be. Probably won't be. AutoZone notifies 184,995 individuals of MoveIt-related data breach affecting SSN. On November 21st, 2023, AutoZone Incorporated filed a notice of data breach with the Attorney General of Maine after discovering the MoveIt, a file transfer program used by the company, contained a critical vulnerability allowing hackers to access information in the company's possession. In this notice, AutoZone explains that the incident resulted in an unauthorized party being able to access consumer-sensitive information, which includes their social security numbers. Of all things, folks, I couldn't even believe I was reading that. Here we go. It's the story. It was done. A lot of people got violated here. Trespass. If you receive a data breach notification from AutoZone Incorporated, it's essential that you understand what is at risk and what you can do about it. As we've discussed in earlier posts of this article, while all data breaches present certain risks, those involving your SSN are the most concerning. This is because the hackers can easily use your SSN to steal your identity and commit other frauds against you. So you see the weak link in this digital realm. Just one number. And your whole thing, your whole identity is gone. What's in your wallet? Well, probably nothing now because they got you. And you see all the vulnerabilities. You should just see the links of all the vulnerabilities that are out there. I'm going to give you a little bit of a link here to show you all the types of ways. But wow, this is a pretty fascinating. We hand us a phone and we're going to be walking that into the new world. I hope people see that they shouldn't do that. A data breach lawyer can help you learn how to protect yourself from becoming a victim of fraud and identity theft, as well as discuss your legal options following AutoZone MoveIt data breach. Now I've got another third party. I've got to go pay lots of money to tell me how to protect myself after the fact. How can he predict the future? I'll stop reading here, folks. Do not give sensitive info to anyone that doesn't actually need it, in particular the SSN. It's not supposed to be used for identification. I understand the law on this may have been changed, but this is not. That's no reason to not resist even that. What I have also been explaining about is this third-party liability. Don't tempt it. Given this report and the innumerable ways here, lots of ways. Given this, and other showings of the news that this sort of disclosure is a massive vulnerability, the irreparable harm of which cannot be adequately known beforehand. In other words, that lawyer can't help you do anything beforehand if it hits you sideways on something that the industry doesn't want to protect you from, like the central banks. And for this reason alone, despite your programming to surrender, resisting, giving up such information, do not do business with any company insisting on it. It's nobody's business. And in this case, largely, there's no governmental interest to take your Social Security number either. And I would use these stories to show why you can't give them that, even if they insist. So again, just walk away. Doing so will help to resist when they hand the keys to the, to have the cell of your, to hand you the keys to have you enter the cell or pod in this digital gulag. Don't take the keys. Don't let them do this to you. And I have information. Again, I can't understand why you would give your Social Security number to AutoZone, but this happens all the time, 185,000 times here in this one company. And I'll provide another link to Sumo Logic without further comment to go to in order to familiarize yourself with the sort of vulnerabilities your master's card will subject you to. It's amazing. And this is even just not even a small drop out there about it. Don't think some of these unplanned vulnerabilities aren't already with you, all of us, now before it gets into the locking of the door behind you, as what's going on in plan to track you and trace you will be applied to you in the future. It's just a big data, again, big data working. But the vulnerability gets worse here when the government gets a hold of it, and then one day you find yourself you're on the wrong side of the narrative, and the government holds the power of necessity and secret implementation over you and your very existence. Remember, the first article was secretly surveilling what you're doing. We'll read here again. The mouse in the world tends to have a lot of big appetite for this kind of thing. Israeli intelligence to be granted full access to national biometric database. The Israeli government is implementing the significant amendments to the usage and access of biometric data, which could have profound implications for privacy rights, per recent reports of the Calcalist. This move demonstrates the radical shift in control of civilian and private biometric data, especially during the country's wartime. Let me tell you, when they use that word civilian, it is war footing. It's war perception. When they use the word, wherever they use the word civilian is used, it's coming from a war perspective. The retooled regulations allow for a biometric information to be handed over to the security forces for simple identification verification, provided conditions within the nation are declared a special situation. Again, this all can be made up. We've seen how they make stuff up. They'll just make it up for this. Another notable aspect in the absence of any oversight by other governmental entities for this new scope of data access. Logic, again, your phone records. It's no control. Logically, the national database would evolve into a distinct biometric database not governed by earlier or updated regulations. And remember, as I reported, that the Zionistas promoted they could make blood with any DNA signature they wanted. This is years ago I reported on this. In other words, they can put you at the scene of a crime that you were never at. Start putting together the data points here about this stuff and your vulnerabilities. And the intelligence agency that's going to commit war crimes, a belligerent occupier, killing people with any excuse, is getting the ability in their country to get the data. This will be a model. Remember, your police are being trained by Israeli intelligence, I've been told. And other things. And so, it's a small world. And what of the deceptions else ways brought by these belligerent occupiers? We read, IDF raided Al-Shifa Hospital despite uncovering Hamas headquarters miles away. I reported on the instance of the fact that they found nothing, but now we're seeing there was something, but it wasn't anywhere close. Again, deception. These organized criminals, these belligerent occupiers, violating all norms, are not beyond just making stuff up. And I don't see the same difference in lots of governments anymore, but here we are. Israel has long insisted the Palestinian militant groups operates out of hospitals and other protected infrastructure. Consortium News cited a Jerusalem Post story published ahead of the controversial raid detailing how the IDF had discovered Hamas underground high command center 5 miles away from the hospital. The IDF, nevertheless, went ahead with the assault at Al-Shifa continuing to insist that the complex hit Hamas's central base of operations without mentioning the discovery it had made days before. Failure to uncover such a structure has led news outlets like the Associated Press and The Guardian to question the claims that served as the basis for the raid of the hospital, a protected site under international humanitarian law. Now, why are they coming in as the press after the fact? Well, behind the woodshed, we were ahead of that. Anybody that could read this, anybody listening behind the woodshed was already ahead of that. Why does it take the press to find out after? Israel has been accused of misrepresenting water reservoirs and elevator shafts inside Al-Shifa and other hospitals as Hamas tunnels in what critics say is an effort to justify what otherwise is illegal airstrikes. Note to self. Zionist Federation members are lying demons, and take particular note. When Biden said his father told him he didn't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist, when Biden said he was a Zionist but not Jewish. Yeah, it's kind of like that. The un-Jewish Zionist Federation movement is everywhere, and its demonic influence must be eradicated in defense of the world, from my perspective. This is where we were talking about the deception that the Zionist Federation political movement used Jewish people. And they accepted. And now look what's going on and the death and destruction going on to perpetuate the movement. Like I said, Hamas wants to be perpetuated. It was born. It's going to want to continue. Reading here, a video purporting to show the Palestinian nurse complaining Hamas was taking over Al-Shifa was also exposed to fake, with the nurse identified as an Israeli actress. While Washington initially backed the IDF's claims that Hamas was using Al-Shifa as a command center, U.S. officials began carefully referring to the hospital as a command node. Oh, it matters in the words, folks. I keep telling you that, but here, command node is not the headquarters. Command node, instead of even before the raid, suggesting an awareness that the militant group's nerve center was elsewhere. Mind boggles, folks. I just don't understand the criminality. I'm not wired that way. The criminality these people are willing to do. There's no moral bone, sinew, cell in their bodies, these Zionists. Absolutely despicable. Another clear violation of the U.S. government is okay with and willing to foist upon my listener as well. Remember, I don't talk about Israel without the Middle East because I'm talking about it over there. I'm saying these are evidences of the things that are going on in the world that are happening to you, whether you see them or not, or whether it's happening quite yet. Israel leaving Gaza economy in ruins. How about the United States doing that to you? Gaza economy is 100% dependent on two sources of revenue, foreign aid, and access to Israel's labor market. The open-air prison, folks. Just think about how this has all been foisted, pushed onto, imposed upon the Palestinians in their own land, no less. Could that happen to us in somewhere else? Maybe. That's why I'm talking to you behind the woodshed. Anybody who can listen, particularly the people of the United States of America, this is happening to you. You don't even know. Like the Detroitification of America, of America relative to, go look and see, if you don't think a bomb went off, you'll be right. A bomb didn't go off. But it wasn't a military bomb. It was an economic bomb. All made by policies and administrations that set this up to take us down. Gaza 100%, and they have two sources. The latter is gone. The labor market from Israel is gone, probably forever. The only thing remaining is foreign aid, Marco Papik, chief strategist of Clock Tower Group, says. According to the report, the current escalation of the conflict, which started on October 7th, was deprived of the territory of its sole source of income, access to Israel's labor market. Over the past month, approximately 182,000 Gazans have lost their jobs, representing 61% of its workforce, according to the International Labor Organization. There's over 2 million, almost 3 million people there, and only 182 people work in Israel, folks. So this does not sound like a people of self-determination required by international agreement or the law of occupation, as I read in part last week, does it? And so, more things that are wrong, absolutely wrong, the United States is okay with. And again, coming up to the point, disgraceful action just happening, not quite yet. And as they kill the people, they kill journalists, the witnesses. Journalist casualties in Gaza conflict is revealed. At least 57 reporters, predominantly Palestinians, have been killed in the war, according to Committee to Protect Journalists. Reporting reporters working in Gaza Strip are facing particularly high risk since, quote, they tried to cover the conflict during the Israeli ground assault, including devastating Israeli air attacks, their strikes, disrupted communications, supply shortages, and extensive power outages. The journalists across the region are making great sacrifices to cover their heartbreaking conflict. Those in Gaza, in particular, have paid and continue to pay an unprecedented toll and face exponential threats. Many have lost colleagues, families, and media facilities and have fled seeking safety when there is no safe haven or exit. And there is none, folks. This is the other thing about this. Shooting fish in a barrel. These fish are shooting back. So I don't know where people, a lot of people want to say that's condemnatory. I don't believe so, but I want you to start shooting fish in a barrel and tell me whether they shoot back and see how you then put yourself in the fish's position and then you can't shoot. Maybe there's a reason for the Second Amendment. At least 11 journalists were reported injured on top of the deaths, and another 19 ended up arrested by the Israelis, the Zionists, apart from the numerous media workers who were subjected to censorship, assaults, threats, cyber attacks, and even the killing of family members, it said, as I reported last week. All of this is against international law. Even the barest snippet, as I read in last week's regarding the belligerent occupations. Just looking at just a part of it. And they're violating all of that and so much more. And the U.S. is okay with that. My listener, if you live in the United States, your government is quite okay with all this. What do you think, then, if you look and apply what I'm saying, what do you think the U.S. government thinks about the freedoms of expression or of the press or as a whistleblower of my listener? Don't be okay with that, folks. I mean, this is part of the reason I keep talking about this. You could be next. I keep telling people this. It doesn't look like it. We just think it's the other guy, but it's not. And this is another pinnacle of disgrace, it seems to me. There's going to be a lot of people that don't agree with me. There's been a lot of people that don't agree. It's so much they don't listen. They won't listen behind the woodshed. Very small listenership. And I've kind of figured out why. I'm going point to point. I support everything I say, point. And I think it's objectively discerned. And I don't get anybody talking wrong. And it would seem to me if people were looking for the truth and they were wanting to take action against the wrong around them and be upstanding and be the example, I'd have a whole lot more listeners. But I don't. And so this is a truth. This is our society is reflecting that lack of interest. That we see it from their representatives, so-called, I would have to say here. Because I know there's a spirit of people, there's a spirit in people that they really understand that they would prefer the organic, limited form government and the protections that could have offered that have gone away from it. I hope there's that spirit abiding in people that wakes up here real soon. We're given all the evidence to be able to do that at this point. But in support of all of those war crimes, this is maybe the worst. This is way worse, as I read this. It occurred to me it's way worse than Clown World. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a resolution equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. And you're not going to see it stated that way, but the way you read what they're supporting and what they do, and you look at the history as I've discussed it here in the last few weeks, Zionist extremism is alive in both political parties. And I've been calling it the Uniparty, but now we may know who they're the agents for here with this vote. The Uniparty is made up of foreign agents or the stupidest attention-getting brown-nosing overachievers on the face of the planet. They are certainly not worthy of representing the American people and must resign over this here, folks, for fraud and malfeasance in office. Nobody worthy of government office can be so stupid as to confuse an 1800s political movement for groups of ancient peoples, such as the Palestinians themselves, known to be Semitic, and preferring to insult these representatives so-called, insult those ancient people in favoring a political movement of Zionists, the Zionist Federation, that cannot be Semitic, even by act of Congress. Think about what's going on here. This is immensely problematic. It's a disgrace. Just two House members did not vote in favor of resolution of affirming Israel's right to exist. Doesn't exonerate them either. I won't discuss more of that. It's not worth the time in some regard. This is everybody here should resign. Just introduced by Republican Representative Mike Lawler of New York. Interesting name for what they've just done. The resolution affirms a variety of widely accepted facts about Israel and the Jewish people, including the atrocity of the Holocaust and the history of the persecution of Jews. However, the resolution made no mention of the Palestinians, who have their own historical claims in the region. And there you can read the rest of the story. Confusing here, folks. Confusing the Jewish people with the Zionist Federation is fraud. The Holocaust and the Jewish persecution are not relevant to Palestine. Not acknowledging the international agreements that have been made first and recognizing those in the first instance, the self-determination of the Palestinians, the people in Palestine, is a fraud by omission. These folks just done. Their fraudulent enactments are no force in fact, actually, if we were to actually put the scrutiny onto it, you know, in a just Republican form government. They would, though, however, in a tyranny. So you decide where you think we live. The uniparty members of this Zio party are in contempt of law and must resign their office. Political prostitutes all, I conclude. Even the two detractors are panderers. And you got to listen, one, to the reason of one, and the other one abstained, who should have spoken. Again, to not speak and to allow the Jewish state without question, notwithstanding the international recognition when it denounced the territory of Palestine and the people were not self-determinate, is not an excuse. The Zio Party representatives completely are devoid of the context and will disregard organic people elsewhere, the organic rights of people elsewhere. So how can my listener expect then that they would honor your organic rights? They can't recognize them elsewhere. How are they going to recognize yours? I don't think that you can feel that they would. And they just proved it. This is, again, despicable display and disregard. It's undeniably disgraceful. Yes, I'm dissing them. I just cannot believe what I'm reading here. This is the state of the world right here. You commingle and confuse things. And then you come as the world's most powerful nation, and make this a law is disgraceful. Absolutely disgraceful. More deceptions here, folks, wrought by this leader of that belligerent occupier. Reading here, Netanyahu was protecting Hamas, as stated by the WAPO, the Washington Post. Israeli prime minister has stopped any attempt to remove the Palestinian militant group from Gaza, a historian told the newspaper. Benjamin Netanyahu has had an odd symbiosis with the Palestinian militant group Hamas that has ruled Gaza for decades and has been Israel's prime minister. In the last 10 years, Netanyahu worked to block any attempt to demolishing Hamas in Gaza. Historian Adam Roz said, who studied relations between the prime minister and militant group, calling it a strange alliance. The goal of Netanyahu's policy was allegedly to divide the Palestinians leaving Hamas to rule Gaza and letting its rivals from the Palestinian Authority control the West Bank. The conflict between the two groups made a negotiated two-state solution impossible, WAPO claimed, adding that it was also allowed the prime minister to just disregard the Palestinian issue altogether. Now remember, they're pushing a two-state solution. We can see in the law that that's not supposed to be anybody pushing anything on the Palestinians. They're supposed to be self-determining. That's not happening here. So if I look at this, and they're setting this guy up, it seems, this was all in the record. We talked about it before. This expert pops up to explain that to us, confirming all that we said. My addition on this is, I think Hamas saw the light, and they saw they were the tool, and they're an organization that's going to live, and they chose to at least make it look ostensibly that they're protecting the Palestinian interests, and they got that support. And then they did it really intelligently how they went it. So this setup, because we're watching some news. It's like now with the Biden and the dementia keep coming up. Is Netanyahu the Neo Zelensky on the way out already? Because there is rumor on all that. And so time will tell on any of this. It's only a strange alliance or an odd symbiosis if the CIA, the West, or other Zionists want to deny an unsettling truth which could destroy the Zio regime narrative perceived by the general global public, so-called. So get here, go in there and get the link and read the rest of this report yourself and see whether WAPO discloses that truth, that Mossad and the U.S. made Hamas, and just for the purpose Netanyahu used it. Then Hamas grew up realizing that they were no longer useful. WAPO here keeps a distance, as you can read for, keeping a distance, a CIA distance on the matter by using odd symbiosis as if WAPO or the CIA doesn't know things of the public record that you've already heard explained behind the woodshed. That's why you listen, right? We get there. We get to the point. We see what's wrong and we fix it. Well, you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed. Hope you like that little phrase. That was pretty fun. Notice too here on, I forgot to highlight this last week, so much to say here. But the article is used to impose the two-state solution, as I said just before, and I want to repeat that because it's very important that Washington promotes contrary to Palestinian right to self-determination on their terms. The power here recognized in the various international agreements is consented to by the Zionist Federation itself. So this is not like it's a surprise. This is ongoing. You could read it for yourself. I want to remind you, I'm not saying Zionist Federation because it's an ad hominem. No, His Majesty of the United Kingdom called that in the Balfour letter. That's where I get this stuff from, folks. The people that are authors of this thing. I don't make up if I can get away with it. I may have to every once in a while make up a logical jump to try and get somewhere, but it's not something until I prove it that I would stand on. No, this is all written for us in historic documents. All we got to do is just put enough time to read. And despite all this international agreement to Palestinian self-determination, we see another news article. Notice, Islam in Gaza needs radical changes, says Netanyahu, having no authority or power whatsoever underneath those international agreements. He's already saying and promoting that he's going to tell them how to live their life and where. And they're trying to move those people out. The Israeli prime minister said that he intends to root out the poisonous ideology from Palestinian mosques and schools. Sounds like a direct attack on self-determination. Folks, when are people going to stop this resident evil here? When are we in the world? What do we do? But when are we going to send the message, so-called representatives? Look how far gone they are. And I already know I'm not talking to any of you that support Israel, because none of you that do support Israel go look at law. You're probably lawless in your spirit, and you haven't gone and read. And if you have, you haven't communicated with me what the objective basis you're using that would be contrary to what I'm saying, that would give them any right, the belligerent occupier, any right at all. And so I'm pretty strong on what I say for those reasons and some others. When I keep moving this notice to us through and to show us, it's right in the law. Their intentions are all over this. The evil that's in these people is all over this. And the Palestinians, see, I don't have to have I'm not protecting them or promoting them or trying to support that. I'm saying that there's fundamental laws of property and determination that each one of my listeners should hold dear to themselves that's being violated, that these governments are doing against some people, that we need to take cognizance because they're going to do it to those people. They're doing it to us. They just got to get us looking the wrong way or not quite perceive what they're doing. Israel will purge Gaza's mosques and schools of their poisonous ideology once its war with Hamas concludes, Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told ex-owner Elon Musk in an interview on Monday. The Israeli premier pointed to the wealthy Gulf states as the examples of Muslim countries that had been de-radicalized. Speaking to Musk in an interview live streamed on X, Netanyahu said that the destructive Hamas would be a precursor to some systemic changes in Gaza. Quote, we have to demilitarize Gaza after the destruction of Hamas. We have to de-radicalize Gaza, and that will take some time, he stated, especially work on the mosques and on the schools. That's where children imbibe their values, and then we have to rebuild Gaza. So one of the reasons, if you think back real shortly here, that's been going on that long, one of the first reasons Hamas acted was in defense of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, desecrated by the Zionists, military rabbis, and the Jews alike. So and we go on to the next point of that transforming children's values sounds a lot like sustainable development goals, don't it? Yeah, you know, aided by those in UN rights of child, defeating your families. Yeah, of course. It's all a form of child abuse. And that's what Musk says he abhors. And I have to ask, really? Who is this guy Musk? We can read some more here. We have to demilitarize Gaza after the destruction of Hamas. We have to de-radicalize Gaza. And that will take some time, as I repeat, Netanyahu's saying. Okay, this is also, as I read last week, a violation of the duties of the belligerent occupier, international law, and the agreements ratified by the nations of the world. Don't be of the world, folks. There's just no truth in it. Under the law of belligerent occupation, and you heard me read it, Palestinians have the right to resist, but the Zionist regime and occupier, being a warmonger, non-peaceful invader, has no right of self-defense. We've read it. And Elon is okay with these violations. I almost can't believe this, in a way. This guy will speak on either side of the fence, and I think it just has to do with he's focused on, well, I don't know what he's focused on. I get a sense of what he's doing and where he's focused and where he thinks he goes, but this was a new level of down for me with him. And so reading on this, he's okay. He's talking with Netanyahu, gave him space and time. It doesn't challenge any of it. I noticed in the picture when he was over there in Israel, he just shaking his head, didn't say a thing. Very interesting to me. Just looked around and then comes up and supports this guy, puts him on unchallenged at all, and probably going to maintain that he now supports them and gives the war criminals access to his platform through his active encouragement. It was really mind-blowing to hear and see. Is it just me, or has Elon Musk's nose gotten a bit browner? Down past his neck. As we read another story. On the other side, you think given balanced treatment here, Musk responds to Hamas' invitation. It seems a bit dangerous to visit Gaza right now, the U.S. billionaire said. He also had a conversation with Netanyahu during which he agreed with the latter's stance on Hamas, arguing that, quote, those are an intent on murder must be neutralized. No. Musk is saying those who are intent on murder must be neutralized. It's really a statement of absence. Absolutely. No context whatsoever in Musk. So apparently that brown nose to the shoulders does start from the top of his head, filling his eyes, or does he want to clarify that, quote, those who are intent on murder must be neutralized includes the Zionistas, wherever they may be found. War criminals, folks. And another thing that occurs to me here, like, think about through this, people think Musk is the bastion of free speech. What about the right of self-determination of the Palestinians over Palestine? Where does Musk actively defend that right of expression and free speech? That's even the more fundamental right, even beyond our First Amendment stuff. Your right of self-determination. Consider this for yourself. Is it taken away, or did you give it up? This is being taken and underneath a war footing, completely in violation of all known norms. And what of those agreements? We can hear, see the rumblings through the world, people speaking. Putin notes importance of establishing Palestine within the 1967 borders. That's not necessarily a two-state solution. But anyway. So Russia weighs in. President Vladimir Putin said in a message to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas that the key to resolving the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is the creation of a Palestinian state within 1967 borders. Quote, it is this, the creation of a sovereign Palestinian state within the 1967 borders that we can see the key condition for achieving a comprehensive, long-term, and just Palestinian-Israeli settlement, said Deputy Foreign Minister Mikhail Bogdanov, who read out the Russian president's message to Abbas at an event marking the day of solidarity with the Palestinian people at the Palestinian embassy in Russia. Note here, the 1967 border recognition is just actually what? Certainly much bigger than where Gaza is. Is that just? Is the 1967 border just? I'm not so sure. I told you there's 1922 condition. It's all outside of the self-determination of the Palestinians. In the article, you'll notice as you read, he's silent as to the Zionist Federation occupying Palestine, but mentions Jews as part of the multicultures that are in Russia. So he's promoting the multiculturalism of Russia here as well. Getting back to what he suggests is just, shouldn't he at the minimum have denounced the execution of the Balfour suggestion by His Majesty? Denounce the 1922 League of Nations actions agreeing to impose Zionistic Federation upon Palestine and rescind Russia's recognition of the State of Israel, so-called, having no right, title, or interest, or privity over the territory or the people to do so? Is he missing a whole lot of points here to look past their problem that Russia did back when, in the 40s? Wouldn't that be a more just acknowledgement and actions and silently reaffirming Russia's agreement to allow the belligerent occupier to usurp Palestine in the beginning, aiding and abetting the belligerent occupation of the political movement called the Zionist Federation? This is not unknown information, folks. I'm not making any of this stuff up. In fact, I'm kind of learning this a little bit, all these details, as I did COVID surgery. But you know, we were months and months and months ahead. I was a month and a half ahead of the order to make that so. And I told you when it was going to happen and then what was going to happen after that. So once you start seeing something, once we're called to attention to it, the information is there to give us a heads up. And we can really stop trying to have an opinion lead us more than the facts. And then we set our principles to them. You have facts that you apply law. And that is my basis. Not Palestinian, not Hamas, not Israel, not Jews, not any of that. You have facts and law. And I don't hear anybody speaking to that. And when I do that, I see a different picture. And I can even see, I believe there are massive errors in Russia's position here, notwithstanding the acknowledgement of the 1967 border. So do we have examples here of what sovereignty is? He talks about a sovereign Palestinian people. Do we have examples? Sovereign self-determination is guaranteed to the Palestinians? Would this also imply here the Palestinians need to be secure as provided under an international agreement from occupation, that they have a territory at all to do this before all this happens? We can see what sovereignty is, even the disregarding of so-called law and finding the excuse, coming up with the right phrase. It's a node, not a headquarters. European country imports banned Russian gold. Switzerland is reportedly using loopholes to bypass its own sanctions. However, the Swiss regulation states that the gold was produced in Russia before the embargo is not subject to sanctions, meaning that the commodity can be legally imported from third countries. In August 2022, Switzerland joined the EU's seventh package of Ukraine-related restrictions, which included a ban on the direct and indirect purchase, import, or transfer of gold and gold jewelry originating from Russia, and also prohibited exports from Russia to the bloc. Sanctions also target exports of gold items processed in a third country. Since the ban took effect, the question of where and how Switzerland, a major global hub for processing the precious metals, sources its gold, have been the subject of growing media and public attention. Some media outlets have been suggesting that the EU ban apparently had little impact on Swiss imports of gold from Russia, as its refineries continued to buy and remelt the metal, making it virtually impossible to trace its origin. So I don't even hear this level of discussion for the Palestinians either. Being able to import contrary to legal. So how much can we put on the fact that this more than a loophole here, that when gold is bought by a third party, as opposed to, let's say, some sort of Russian trust agent, it is private property, and why it becomes virtually impossible to identify Russian gold, when at the point of the taking of the private exclusive possession of the gold, it's no longer Russian gold. See, gold being private property rather than state property is probably its most valuable feature, as I've talked about over and over, and why in the United States, when they took the gold from the people, the miners, they couldn't touch, because that represented their property that they did with their labor. And no one knew that to extend them to themselves, and we had a debasing of our whole economy back in the Depression times. So we have a lot of governmental, non-contextual mindlessness going on. We have some more here. U.S. vows to halve Russian energy revenues by 2030. So they tried to stop the gold. Switzerland figures out a way around it. Now, the United States government's still beating the bad drum here, until it's beating itself in the face is what it's doing. It vows to halve Russia's energy reserve, another black gold. Washington is committed to its sanction policy. Governmental, non-contextual mindlessness is what I see here over and over again in these next few tabs. In all nations, it seems. In another effort to reduce Russian energy profits, the U.S. Treasury Department is seeking to increase the cost Moscow has to pay to run an alleged shadow fleet of tankers that reportedly have unclear ownership and insurance status, and on which the price caps have limited traction. The U.S. is looking for ways to make that shadow fleet less effective. Okay, I mean, there's more to read. There's a whole lot more information in there. But did my listener pick up on what's important for us locally? I mean, besides that the United States government has lost the economic war it started, but is too exceptional to face reality here. The hallmark of sustainable buffoonery at its worst. But no, did you pick up on the control of the vessel, carriage, the vessel connection through registration and insurance? Did you pick that up? I hope so. Some of you do this. Tell me you're interested in all this subject. I'm trying to show you what you'll read when you go to your motor vehicle code, let's say. So where are you in your things registered and taking benefit of some form of insurance is how they can potentially control my listener. Is that connection and control actually necessary is your next question. Look very carefully. So has my listener read the law, such as the Motor Vehicle Code, to carefully decide that? This is not an opinion. It's nothing. I'm not taking any new ideas. When you read it enough, you'll see it starts to come apparent. Would an occupying power, though, bent on your private destruction, honor the law it purports to comport itself to? Think about this, how this you're watching the example in Gaza and Israel. Or is the Zionista belligerent occupation enough evidence to the contrary when you apply it at home? Now consider your civil rights in the U.S. here, where you're presumed to take benefit of law accepting to pay exactions of every kind. These are extortions of every kind and no other. You can find that and read that at 42 U.S.C. 1981, and not having the rights of the Palestinians to the right of self-determination. Think about your place actually in America, so-called. Does my listener see why I use international news touching international law is important and instructive on the predicament few Americans understand they're in here? I try to explain it without getting too people take the information I say and think it's too literal, and it's on a case-by-case basis is my problem. It's the handing the gun to a kid that kills the cat, and maybe worse. You really have to pay attention. So does my listener understand when that little story, they talk about registration insurance, there's a leash right there. And then I'm asking, are you sure that you need to do both of those? And then you need to see what the outs are about that in your local area. I'm trying to give the people, if they'll listen, the glimpse of the open-air prison that even the Palestinians have a better right through, even though we're watching the decimation. Remember, self-determination is probably the first right you need to have. And then these other things are attachments, are legalisms. Most Americans are too exceptional and can't see the war crimes against the Palestinians because Americans are far worse off in their agreement and being complicit in their peaceful bondage. And bondage is a form of insurance, isn't it? Remember what I said about the insurance being a connection and a control point. Look at your motor vehicle code. Go look at your laws. Go look very carefully. I'm not going to suggest anything. I'm going to say start educating yourself. You see these stories in the news, and you see the connections and examples, and you see, and they're telling you how the connections are made. And I've been asking you to understand what those are and then make a decision for yourself whether or not those are valid against you. No different than, I suspect you of a COVID. Same stuff over and over. So they are worse off here because Americans are not in any substantive manner resisting their open-air prison construct here. We all agree to it somehow. It's difficult. I'm not going to say it's easy. Right. It's likely why I have some trouble right now, but that's neither here nor there. When we're striving to be those people that are free and free from oppression and usurpation, it takes a lot of work. It's a war. It's literally the war. It's a civil war. Well, you have civil rights. So, and few want to hear this truth about this open-air prison construct. I've talked about it over and over. And likely because most are incapable, let alone act in resistance, as the right under the international law for occupied people. We don't even live up to that as Americans either. Just as I read in Section 7, belligerent occupation, and I referenced to the United States occupation of America through Lincoln. And we've read the documents in the past to explain that exists. And no one has come to show me different. And I don't know that they can, but I'm always open, definitely. So on the other hand of all this, here we have here's an explanation of an economic slavery and how Russia avoided it. So the United States had these bad policies, the economic war they lost just on their first salvo. And Russia's surviving fairly well, thank you very much. Predictable as well. So on the other hand, though, we see what not the sovereignty, but the explanation of economic slavery is. And I said, watch Russia. They'll be an example for us, for a people that wants to extricate themselves and put themselves in a more solid foundation. This is coming true, that holding is coming true even in this story here. Sergei Paltiev, the untold story of how Russia could have ended up like Argentina. This is also what's interesting. This came up, Argentina came up big in the news here. And a big surprise, and everyone was supportive, but I'm not so sure. Again, I have a different view, apparently, on some of this. And in an early 1990s, it says here, the economic policy of Buenos Aires was seen as an example for Moscow. But 30 years on, what has it led to? Now, I found that a compelling question, and it's a little bit of a history lesson. And I want you to read this story. I won't say much more because, again, so much to cover. But you get the link and read how those of the world, indenture countries. And you'll start to see what Russia did. And I was saying, watch Russia, because they were countering that. Now, that's aside the problem that they're actually bringing in the financial system. But look how they made the difference in order to be the distinction in the world. And probably why the West wanted a bit of that on the geopolitical side, wants to take them down. But Argentina was in the news, and this guy is saying, well, Russia survived because it didn't go the route of Argentina. In the news is something else that's pretty interesting. I talked a bit about the chainsaw massacre, which is here. The situation with Argentina is apparently lost on Argentina still about the indenturing of total nations dealing with the IMF and the World Bank. And then we also see in Argentina the people voting this guy in and apparently also not shocked over his support of committing genocide, which is, again, another blindness in people. Not as a judgment. It just seems to be an obvious fact to me of a fact, of a condition that exists. Shock result, radical political upstart Javier Milei wins Argentine presidency. The outsider, neoliberal candidate, rose to prominence while promising to overturn the economic and social order in the South America's second largest economy. Understand this, how big this is now. It's second largest, and it's still just destroyed. Right-wing populist candidate Javier Milei pulled off a surprising win in the final round of Argentina's presidential election on Sunday, stunning establishment forces on all sides of the country's political spectrum. The 53-year-old was described himself as an anarcho-capitalist and libertarian, although others have disputed that latter label, noting Milei's conservative social views. Milei has suggested breaking relations with Brazil and China, among other countries, promising closer relations with Israel and the United States. He also wants to dollarize Argentina's economy, adopting the U.S. dollar as the country's official currency over Argentine peso. So is this really actually an anarcho-capitalist or an outsider? And didn't dollarization through the IMF economically destroy Argentina already once? He's just bypassing the end result of BRICS, it seems to me. He's not an anarcho-capitalist, unless he's a banker, I suppose. So in the U.S., is U.S. dollarizing Argentina's economy anarcho-capitalism, as most people recently defined it? How about an outsider? Is he an outsider where he intends to side up with the Zionistas and exit BRICS in his dollarization effort? Or does this smell of another CIA or Southcom operation? And I've been reading stories that it is involved. The CIA is involved all over this, why it's turning out this way. So if that's true, if so, folks, democracy, the very thing the West touts that it imposes or promotes, does not exist. More evidence of a reality that we've all been, we can feel we knew, but this is now the workings of it. President-elect Milei spews economic nonsense bound to make Argentina the 51st U.S. state, says an expert based on this nonsense going on. Argentina people voted for the right-wing firebrand economists out of despair in a hopeless situation, Professor Heinz Dietrich, former advisor to the late Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, says. Argentina is a country in a terminal state without a future, clarified Dietrich, and who now manages a research center in Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana in Mexico City. The South American country is mired in foreign debt with hyperinflation and hyperinterest spiraling out of control, the pundit explained. Furthermore, the political class is totally corrupt. Sound like Ukraine? There are no trustworthy national leaders. Parties or historical projects, national identity, and self-confidence have been undermined. The republic, if you can keep it, if you can find it, if you knew to find it, if you knew what it looked like when you saw it. Same problem here. Indeed, the second largest national economy in South America behind Brazil, Argentina is facing one of the worst economic downturns in decades. They're a part of the IMF. Javier Milei, or according to Heinz Dietrich, is a version of the typical finance capital tyranny of the third world countries under the strict control of the IMF and World Bank. Quote, he will do what his bosses in Washington and the militaristic and financial Argentinian oligarchy tell him to do, called the city, this financial oligarchy. Incidentally, both Javier Milei and former Economy Minister Sergey Massa are puppets of Washington colonialism and the Monroe Doctrine. There it comes back in, underscoring the thing that's changing now that Biden talked about that I reported on a little bit earlier, the old world order for the new ordered world, underscored this patent, adding that Massa, a Peronist politician, was, quote, the man of the State Department. recent developments in Latin America have been contributing to the growing shift toward multipolarity, representing a rejection of the policy announced by the fifth president of the United States, James Monroe, in 1823, aimed at securing sweeping influence over Latin American countries. The document at the time declared all countries of South America to be in the zone of U.S. interests. However, Milei's election win in Argentina and the plethora of statements the politician has made may give Washington hope to secure a tighter control in its Latin American backyard, especially bearing the mind its standoff with China. So, what's the take for us, folks? Desperation causes populations to jump here from the frying pan to the fire, or in this case, specifically, into the campfire scene in the Chainsaw Massacre. Oh, you say there's no campfire scene in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre? Yeah. Well, if not, watch Argentina. It appears to be a sequel with a campfire scene. Millier, a Western madman carving up a desperate people. Note to self, folks, don't act from desperation. This is how they get us. Don't be under despair as much as possible. Take an objective foundational view of things. So here's another anti-globalist running for office in the Netherlands, and I think he just won. This is the one list before. I got this at the same time. I wanted to really touch on this globalist, non-globalist type of thing. The anarcho-capitalist, and they're not. Anti-globalist Dutch politician hit on head with bottle. Terry Bondé was repeatedly struck by an assailant just days before the general election in the Netherlands. Dutch politician Terry Bondé, has been hospitalized after he was attacked at a campaign event by a man wielding a beer bottle. The incident was the second attack on Bondé in recent weeks and took place 2 days before a general election. So we feel sorry for him now being attacked. That's what that's about. We go on to read, though. Bondé describes his party as, quote, the most energetic anti-globalist movement of our time, and is a vocal critic of immigration, woke and LGBT propaganda, and the Dutch membership of the EU and NATO. He has described the conflict in Ukraine as a stupid NATO war against Russia and praised Russian President Vladimir Putin as a huge hero in the fight against American-led globalism. So, he's opposed to American-led globalism, folks, as supported by Argentina's Milei, but embraces the Russian-led globalism. Is not an anti-globalism candidate, not an anti-globalism officer now, president, and just as Milei is not an anarcho-capitalist when supporting the global financial system, the U.S. Treasury being the essential part. As I've read all this stuff just recently, all coming together here in these notices, exactly how it's coming down, and that these things are not inconsequential, and they all mean something that we're being told. And again, almost none. Anticlimactic. Is that global warming? I don't know. As the world here is facing a debt tsunami, all this is going on with this world financial debt tsunami. Bond yields have risen substantially in developed countries with central banks offloading their vast holdings. This is not so well playing so well anymore, and we were watching now gold really starting to go up a bit, now matching the highest it's ever been here this last week. This comes at a bad time as central banks have accelerated the reduction of huge bond holdings amassed through quantitative easing. That was what the Fed, you know, geniuses were figuring out. Everybody was saying that wasn't going to work, and it doesn't. So here we go. Be careful, folks. This is the economic tear-up, the debt tsunami coming, and it's just not debt. So let's not get focused too much just there. There's a whole lot of dynamics around the finagling or the manipulation of fiscal policy and monetary policy. Quote, this double whammy means bond yields, particularly in the longer end of the curve, are set for a difficult 2024, suggesting the U.S. Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, and the Bank of England should curb their enthusiasm for shrinking their balance sheets. This comes at a bad time as central banks have accelerated the reduction of huge bond holdings amassed through quantitative easing. I had a question there. Is that true, given that they're actually buying gold at this point. However, keep moving. No real plan here is the point. They are running out of maneuvering room as the wheels of the global rickshaw and clown car are beginning to hang the edge, folks. We read the same could be observed in the EU, where Germany, France, Italy, and Spain are expected to increase bond sales to more than $1.1 trillion next year. The European Commission is also expected to issue 150 billion euro of bonds. Even a small reduction in QE reinvestment looks ill-advised, according to the report. While it's the first line of defense for the euro areas, that allows maturing German debt to be recycled into Italian bonds. Think about, wow. German mindlessness here and helplessness is fiat is global here, folks. It's all the same characters. So how does one legitimately recycle debt, actually? This is like toxic fraud, moving as money. As money is what you deal with. That's the Federal Reserve note. Works as money. It's not money. Listen very carefully. The words are important. Yes, it's not a headquarters. It's a node. Okay, now we exonerate ourselves. Is that really mature or mere more facade? Is this really just a fraudulent cover that they keep speaking? Is it? And I say that because is it a lot worse? And yes, fraud. All this is fraud, and it's very expensive. You're going to watch, I think. I don't see how we get away globally. The world starts to pay for this fraud. And no, I don't know if anybody has figured out what they were going to do to sidestep it. Russia, I told you, you're going to go to production. Start producing. That's, do something that someone needs by your hands or by the group of you hands that can do something. Scholz's recovery plan made Bundestag burst with laughter, dubbing him a plumber of power. Very interesting developments going on in Germany. Just a economic powerhouse rendered to laughter in its own government. Chancellor Olaf Scholz was mocked by peers in the Bundestag while talking about the supplementary budget for the year 2023. In his speech, he stressed the German economy is facing an energy crisis and the declaration of a state of emergency is a legal way to suspend the debt brake. This was met by bitter laughter of opposition members. This is a sustainable self-inflicted wound, folks. He now uses to create a state of emergency. This is a sort of debacle is festering here in the United States. This is all how this seems to work. I see it just about everywhere. Olaf Scholz tried to downplay the significance of the measure, saying that this government was merely confirming what we had already decided at the end of 2022, which was necessary and right then and is still just and right today and necessary. He added that these steps would not affect the well-being of German citizens, triggering another burst of laughter from the Bundestag members. Exactly. This sort of harm is designed to hurt people of a nation. This is a fact. It's inescapable. You can't get away from it. The weather, whether global or local, it's going to be devastating. But do the people see this? Do the people themselves see the existential threat? I'm not so sure. Now, while the Bundestag laughs in just ridicule, weren't they also agreeable when it allowed an unconstitutional act as declared by the court recently to put them in this place? Christian Democrat Union leader Friedrich Merz openly questioned the chancellor's competence, dubbing him a plumber of power, meaning that Scholz was poor education and understanding of how to run a state. Merz made a verbal coup de grace, saying that the shoes you are standing in as a chancellor of the Federal Republic of Germany are at least two sizes too big for you. Sounds like a clown to me. AfD leader Alice Weidel remarked, the crisis is a crisis of trust. Folks, listen very carefully to this one. Now, one breach of trust at the traffic light is followed by another. Where was the concern before everyone piles on now, though, folks? Listen to how this works. This is a massive breach of trust, no doubt, and a maladministration of the Bundestag merely laughs. Is that really their response they should be doing? Resignation of the entire government administration is appropriate. But is the Bundestag more trustworthy because of the general acknowledgement of necessity to undo the harm foisted upon the government people and at the very least denounce the anti-Russian energy policy, eliminate the destructive sustainable policies, and restore the economy to pre-globalist usurpation status would be a better action on their part instead of just laughing? I think it would, but I don't think that that's going to be done. And I'll be happy to see the Bundestag laugh at me, then prove me wrong, given that what they would enforce the public trust, what I've just offered, would enforce that public trust and benefit the people of Germany and provide an example to the people of other nations on how to rooter out, with this plumber, rooter out the sustainable sewer. Given plumbers are apparently so uneducated, I wonder who Herr Merz calls when his plumbing needs clearing. We always have a skeleton in our closet, don't we? And as it starts to unravel with Germany, Germany to terminate energy price breaks, finance minister. So it's all coming undone. The green thing was wrong, just generally wrong. And we're finding the fact of it. Reality bites cold, I guess. Berlin froze major spending commitments after the national off-budget fund was declared unconstitutional. This is what they're talking about there. This is what the laughter was all about. The ruling has jeopardized the funding of plans to modernize the German economy and fight climate change. The decision by the country's top court could also set precedent for fiscal responses to future crisis. The story goes on more. You see how it's supposed to work. Not instead of enacting laws that they go through that are unconstitutional, they shouldn't allow them through. But when they do, they cost a lot. Fraud is expensive, as I said. This cost protections weren't done to protect the consumers, though, in this act, but to cover, hide, obscure the constitutionally unlawful decisions made by the Germans to irrationally and punitively impose sustainable ability goals, cutting even nuclear power and the green source of cheap energy. Even so, that way, even professing green, they cut nuclear power. And how does this go into March? If the courts just said that the appropriation from then before for such things was unconstitutional back when it began, what is going on still that's not quite right? Maybe my German listener here can explain that part to me. How do you continue to march? How are you going to explain it when the population sat there and accepted the usurpation of lawful government? And just like the rest of the world has and did, in particular, the great Comey swindle reset going on without a much of a further whimper. So the people are not out of this at all either. And I hope we get that locked in. More Germany story. Germany is in a serious Bavarian crisis. Yes, we get more points to this. If you think that my focus on the destructive government subsidies for those green things or corporate welfare is misplaced, this article will show this German official looking at the ramifications of allowing this parasitic agenda to destroy economies, bringing untold hardship, is saying the same thing to Chancellor Olaf, this official Marcus Söder. And you need, I think, read this and understand what he's saying and let him tell you some stuff here. This is a classic, a techno-sophist, sustainable self-inflicted wound, now open and gaping for all to see. As I said, 2023, for as detrimental as I'm experiencing it, it's showing us how all these things are actually working. I have another link here. I'll just go quickly. German economy to slow without green transition. These people don't give up. The sustainable sewer, the rats in the sustainable sewer don't give up. Like Merz doesn't completely eradicate them when his discussion, the economy is bankrupt because of the Gaia religious agenda. And this guy comes in and says, we're German economy to slow without green transition. Folks, it is stopped because of the green transition. So read this story, get these links, be informed, and get a better context of what's going on. And I guess hope something here I said will help you, make you look into the future, be predictive, stay out of the way of the harm if you can, no jeopardy as much as you can, make your life a little bit easier in the tight. Looks like some tough times coming, and I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature will.
Another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. from behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast. This is Hal Anthony. Till next time, Journey with Purpose.
Up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.